Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic of ancient and modern necromancy, alias mesmerism and hypnotism denounced. We're so glad you could join us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with our morning prayer.
Today I have excerpts from the Blue Book, Divinity Course in General Collectania, and they are all from Mrs. Eddy's instructions. Abide in love. Nothing can touch or harm you in love. Know that you live in love. Love is God as life itself. Take this understanding with you and bless others with love. When animal magnetism has done its worst, it has done nothing. When animal magnetism has howled and howled, it has done nothing. Truth cannot be reversed. It bears the fruit of health and holiness. Life cannot be reversed. It bears the fruit of immortal harmony. Love cannot be reversed. It destroys all fear and heals the sick and the sinful. I have told you that evil has no power, yet I have told you to handle evil as though it had power. This is because of your place in growth spiritual. When the allness of God is seen, the nothingness of evil is evident. Hold to that. Mary Baker Eddy.
Perfect. Thank you, Florence. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 215. Watch lest you accept and believe stories about our leader to the effect that she frightened her students unduly over animal magnetism, and was at times herself made fearful over it. It was exposed to our leader that animal magnetism is the great deterrent to spiritual growth. The red dragon, standing ready to devour the young child. Her first experience was to observe its operation through persons, when it seemed to make them act as the very embodiment of the evil one. One who declared that Mrs. Eddy painted exaggerated pictures of evil in the early days, or that her exposure of it were fabrications, would thereby exclude some of the most important stones in the building of Christian Science. Perhaps her efforts might be called the fear of the Lord, since the effect of her disclosures of evil was to drive students to a more active and powerful demonstration of good. If a father wanted his child to hurry home at night, he might be justified in declaring that some danger lurked at the child's heels. His motive would make what he did legitimate. Think what it cost Mrs. Eddy to step down into the human mass of falsity and sin in order to probe its hidden workings. She felt at home in the consciousness of good, like a flower in the sun. She thrived on it. She felt far from at home, however, when the necessity was laid upon her to investigate the claims of sin and to share this knowledge with her students. Yet, she emerged from the experience unharmed and with a knowledge of the operation of the lie that she knew would bless all mankind for all time. We must never belittle her experience in the fiery furnace, nor believe that she was fanatical or fanciful when she gave forth the lurid details of the operation of criminal magnetism. Let us rather thank God that through her stripes we are healed. Through her desperate experiences, we learn how to keep awake to the claims of evil and thus give them their death blow. Mrs. Eddy encourages us to believe that if we are awake and alert, we need not pass through the experiences of suffering for sin. You perceive the awfulness of sin, yet she taught the method whereby it can be dealt with, namely, by reducing it to nothingness.
Thank you. All right. What do you have to say about that?
Well, since I was asked to record the Grekel series, I had no idea, none whatsoever, the animal magnetism that was operating to keep her from her discovery. And the more she was, the stronger she was getting, the stronger it seemed, the more animal magnetism was operating through individuals. And it just was really an eye-opener for me. So when I read this watch, I thought, wow, I had no idea. And it just gave me more of an appreciation of what she did and how she had to learn what this animal magnetism is and how to, I mean, it was just incredible. My eyes were really open. So I just appreciate her even more. And so grateful to her showing us and why she has a whole chapter on it. I mean, it came from her experience. Amazing.
Thank you. And this is why, you know, along with your other readings of Prose Work, Science and Health in the Bible, to also be reading a biography of Mrs. Lee, one of the good ones that we have on our website, because you will so appreciate what she's done and also learn how to handle it for yourself. Carpenter Spiritual Footsteps is especially good for that.
Well, I feel it's clear that the world, that she did not exaggerate evil, because the world drives us to Christian Science. If the world didn't do that, then we could think, oh, she must be exaggerating, but, you know, that's, it's not good out there without Christian Science. So,
right.
Thank you. Anyone else?
When Karen read that right now, I really felt that this is a call to all of us to do that work. And I am listening to the recordings from Karen of the Grekel books, and it's really amazing to hear that. And now I felt, yeah, I have to do that. I have to stand up. And how often does it happen? You feel something and somehow enlightened with Christian Science, and the next day, boom, something comes and wants to drag you down.
And our website, the Grekel books.
Oh, I just go on to the publications on the menu, go to publications and then books, and then just look through the authors for Doris Grekel, and it'll be under there.
Thank you. And thank you, Karen, for doing that. That's a huge achievement.
Well, thank you for asking me to do it. Yes. I don't know that I would have actually got into them if I hadn't been asked. So I'm so grateful to be doing it.
That's good. That's how it should be. Who was trying to speak?
I was just saying, I love where it says in the watching point, it would thereby exclude some of the most important stones in the building of Christian Science, because if you aren't handling or know how to handle it or know how to watch for it, animal magnetism, that's just a very key point in Christian Science.
Yes, it certainly is. And just what is animal magnetism?
Nothing. Nothing, nowhere, no place.
The belief in a power apart from God.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something? Go ahead, Sari.
Yes, what I'd like to say is that what I'm really grateful or in the Christian Science support we get from the Plainfield practitioners is that we are taught to heal, not to call a practitioner. The practitioner does the work and we have no clue what happened. We are trained. So when Mother Church members of the Boston group tell me, well, you're not class trained, so how can you call yourself a Christian Scientist, of course, because I'm learning every time I come to the round tables. I listen in on the testimonies and the Wednesday evening meetings and the other services and the webpage. What you practitioners teach us is to work with understanding, the spiritual understanding, not this human sense of glory or faith healing. It's really, really important because it is a science. Christian Science is a science.
Thank you, Zeri. Very important. The whole reason we're doing all this is so you are practitioners in your own right. What does that mean, a practitioner? It means to practice, and you all are practicing it. Therefore, you all are practitioners, and you all should be growing and learning. And when people come to you with problems, you should help them. And as Mrs. Eddy assigned in her class, everyone go out and heal somebody. Well, you all should be doing this, all of you. This isn't just for you to be getting spoon-fed. This is for you to do this work. You are a light. Wherever you live, wherever you are a light. And this work must be done. And we must not fail in doing it, any of us. It's not one person's responsibility, everyone. Gary.
Well, going back to animal magnetism and the point that was being made a little bit earlier, Mrs. Eddy tells us animal magnetism is the sum total of all error. Every mistake, every erroneous belief is animal magnetism. And we have been taught that if we're not handling it, and it comes to you because you're capable of handling it, all right? It wouldn't come to you if you weren't capable. And if we aren't handling it, I guarantee you 100% it will handle you. Okay. And that's the point of handling it. You can't ignore it. You can't sweep it under the rug. You can't just claim that it's nothing and not do something about it.
Anytime you have a problem, I find it very helpful to ask yourself, okay, how am I believing in a power other than God? What is this claiming? As Mrs. Eddy has said, I acknowledge your claims, talking to error, but I denounce your power. So what is it claiming to you? And then you denounce it, its power. Why? Because there's only the one power. And that keeps it very simple. Okay, Florence?
No, I just love Mrs. Evans. I think it's what I heard when she said that if it's not good, it's not from God.
Yes.
Therefore, you know how to deal with it. If it's not good, it cannot come from God.
No. Therefore, you can reject it, eject it, get thee behind me, Satan. Yeah. In the addenda of Collectania, I'm going to read some things I found over the days, but Mrs. Eddy says, students love the explanations of Christian Science. God is love, God is good, God is mind, etc. This is the crown of Christian Science. But they dislike the cross of the Christ, the patient, slow bearing of the cross they shun. They will not handle animal magnetism. All the cross bearing they leave to me, while they love the crown. Yet this lesson they will learn. And then the work of many minds attempted to stop the building of the Mother Church. Now that plan of malicious animal magnetism was defeated. It is up to the students to protect the demonstration from the enemy within the gates. Within the gates. And we are still doing that. And then, attacks on the discoverer and founder of Christian Science are attacks on the cause itself. When will you see this and stop these efforts of animal magnetism to destroy us? The students alone will be responsible if these demon schemes are not ended. Yet who will bear this cross? See Matthew 10:33, and then with love, Mother. And then this, and Florence read part of this. I have told you that evil has no power, yet I have told you to handle evil as though it had power. This is because of your place in growth spiritual. When the allness of God is seen, the nothingness of evil is evident. Hold to that. Now, that's why when people quote me, Mrs. Eddy said this, that, or the next thing. Mrs. Eddy said a lot of things, okay? So for everything you can quote, she probably says something to the opposite, like, I have told you that evil has no power, yet I've told you to handle it as though it had power. So this is why the study of her works is so important, because you must understand truly what she is saying and why she says it. And a lot of it is according to your states and stages of growth. So be very mindful of this, and be careful about just blandly quoting Mrs. Eddy, thinking one thing or the other, because it requires deep and consecrated study of it. And Mrs. Eddy has also said about animal magnetism, it's a bland denial of truth, right? Mm-hmm. What's a bland denial?
To me, after working with this.
You said there, did you go?
Wait, let's start down.
That you ignore it. You think that you're not paying attention to what's really happening. That's the bland denial to me.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Who else is speaking?
Bland is without flavor, without taste, right? Mm-hmm. It's without enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. It's without, you know, without conscience.
That's good.
It's a mindless denial of what is true.
I remember when I was in between two churches, this church and the what I call the mainstream church, and what I had discovered here was, and I've talked about this before, how just eye-opening and wonderful my inner sense knew the truth. And so I tried to tell everyone that I could of this beautiful truth that I had discovered, and I totally encountered the bland denial across the entire church. It was someone listening to you, you were speaking to them from a point of inspiration, and they just cast it aside, or they make some shrug. That's the, you know, how people, you'll experience the bland denial when you tell the truth, and it's just, oh, well, you just went through something really bad. You're not thinking correctly or something.
Thank you very much. We spoke about that yesterday at the Bible study, and if anyone missed it, you really should listen to it. It was a wonderful time together, but that's what we spoke about. Fleeing to Egypt. Why did Joseph take Mary and Jesus fleeing to Egypt? Because it is this bland denial that's out to kill the Christ in you, or in that case, it was out to literally kill Jesus, but you're Christ. That's why you have to be very careful what you tell people. You're so excited about it, and they just will shrug their shoulders, as you said. Thank you, Tony. And yesterday, Benjamin gave a wonderful example of how that had happened to him. In his first reading of Science and Health, his roommate said, oh, don't ever read that again. and Benjamin said, if he'd done that, he would not be here today, that's for sure.
Well, and you know, Jesus warned us, didn't he? I mean, isn't that why he said, don't cast your pearls before swine? You know, it's not personal, but the impersonal opposition to the Christ.
When Gary and Bruce's grandmother visited us.
She was thrilled.
Yeah, many
She
years
had
ago.
The same experience, and she went back to Puyallup, Washington, and told what few members of the church there were left. She told them all about our church, and she got persecuted. I mean, it wasn't nice. Some of it wasn't even bland.
But you can kind of see why, because going back to what Zari said about, I think it was Zari, about people being class taught and all that, it's like on The Chosen with the Pharisees. Oh, I was taught by Nicodemus. I was taught by so-and-so. And they're so proud of that. So when you say something that goes against that, they're instantly like, nope. They don't want to hear.
I was taught by the top teacher in Boston and knew nothing. In fact, it was the opposite. It would taught me wrong, and I had to undo it. So the heck with that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Mrs. Evans used to, she enjoyed mocking that. You know, she would talk about people. I was taught by Dr. Tut. I was taught by whoever was the teacher of the time.
Right.
And so proud, and somehow if you were taught by that person, that meant you knew everything. Or anyway, it's
mm-hmm.
obnoxious. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Florence.
No, it's like when people use generations of having Christian Science in their families as if that means that they know a lot. It's the same mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm. It means nothing. And it means is how much you were demonstrating it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right, Nancy.
Yes. Good morning. I looked up a few of the words to our lesson theme. Necromancy, meaning enchantment or conjuration, the art of revealing future events by means of a pretended communication with the dead. And mesmerism, hypnotic induction, held to involve animal magnetism. Hypnotism, having the quality of producing sleep. And I loved denounced, to pronounce especially publicly, to be blameworthy or evil. And I found an article that I had never read before. It's called Tokens of Divine Love, and it was explaining the purpose of each lesson that Mrs. Eddy gave us to study. And I found it very interesting what she said about this. It's from a Christian Science Journal, April 3rd, 1915, by Lumen A. Field, Tokens of Divine Love. When our revered leader ordained the Bible and science and health as the pastor of the Christian Science Church, she in due time also provided a series of lesson sermons calculated to give to the world, through the light of revelation and reason, a more perfect knowledge of the way of salvation. We are told in the Sentinel of March 2nd, 1899, that the subjects chosen follow the order our leader was accustomed to employ in teaching her classes and her textbook. Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures gives the fundamentals of these sermons in the chapter entitled Recapitulation. The sermon, Ancient and Modern Necromancy, alias Mesmerism and Hypnotism Denounced, is the only one in the series which has as its subject a specific object, the exposure of error, its subtlety, its powerlessness, and its utter nothingness. Excuse me. Some Christian scientists labor under the mistaken impression that they do not like this sermon, yet we should all realize that its teachings are very vital, else it would not have been given us. Its importance may be discerned to some extent if we will but remember that Mrs. Eddy was not able to publish the first edition of Science and Health until she had prepared the chapter on animal magnetism, as we read in Retrospection and Introspection on page 37 and 38. And on page 64 of this same work, Mrs. Eddy states, "It is scientific to abide in conscious harmony, in health giving, deathless truth and love." But she immediately points out that to do this, mortals must first open their eyes to all the elusive forms, methods, and subtlety of error, in order that the illusion error may be destroyed. getting the significant warning. If this is not done, mortals will become the victims of error. This sermon exposes error and its elusive forms, methods, and subtlety to the end that error may be destroyed, its nothingness made plain to us, and we are saved from becoming its victims. I found that very, very powerful.
Thank you. It certainly is. It certainly lays out clearly why we have this subject and how very important it is. And as we've said, everyone wants the lessons on love and happiness and that sort of thing. But this, people don't want to tackle. But you are raising your hand when this, you are saying, I am afraid of error. That is what you're telling. Telling me when you say I don't want to hear anything about error. I don't want to know anything about it. You are raising your hand and saying, I am afraid of error, so I don't want to look at it because it scares the living daylights out of me.
Right.
Well, that's a problem. You see, that's a problem in Christian Science. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is what where a lot of Christian Scientists are. It is where I was. That is exactly how I was. I didn't want to hear anything about it. Now, this doesn't mean that we, you know, just roll around and talk about error and look at the news day and night, because that is foolishness. But we must stare it in the eye and know that it is nothingness. Whatever its claim is, you have to denounce its power. And as you do this, you will build up the strength. It's the power of God working. You will destroy the error, and you will find a peace and a dominion that you never knew possible. So you have to get past this. I don't want to hear anything about it. See no evil, hear no evil.
Speak no evil.
Speak no evil. Nope. That should not characterize a Christian Scientist. It should not. This is what drove Mrs. Evans crazy, and I couldn't understand it when I first met her. I thought she was a lunatic at first. How could she be talking like this? And then I found out, no, she wasn't a lunatic. She was speaking truth, and it was a truth that I needed to hear because I'd been running all my life. You have to be willing to face the claims and denounce its power. You mustn't run. Error is a coward before truth. It only grows as you run. And as that story I love to tell about the man who the devil was chasing, and he ran and ran and ran, and finally the devil caught him. And the man said, what are you going to do with me? What are you going to do with me? And the devil said, I don't know. This is your dream. Remember that one. What are you dreaming? What are you projecting? And what are you afraid of? What on this earth are you afraid of that you think God cannot take care of, that you think has a power more powerful, more mighty than him? And then, boy, you go after it with all your worth. You take that first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and you wipe out whatever belief it is with the power and the authority of Almighty God. This works if you apply it. If you're running or you just want your practitioner to do it all the time, no, sorry. That's not how it works. Florence?
Well, I think we'd be, you know, I didn't realize all that time I was so fearful, oh my goodness, that I was being sinful. I was just denying that first commandment. I'm denying God, his power, presence, everything.
And, yes.
And I thought some people should be sympathetic with me.
Exactly.
That was a huge revelation when I realized what a sinner I was, because I thought I was trying to be so good. No, I was obeying. And as long as you're disobeying the first commandment, guess what?
We'll have the effects.
Well, Mrs. Eddy makes it so clear when she says, we've got to see what error is trying to do and then see that it doesn't do it. So that just does sum it up. And sometimes it's tricks you into thinking it's good things. It's good human things. And so that's where all that pride and all that stuff, we've got to see what error is trying to do and then see that we we straighten that out with ourselves and translate it all back to God.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So, what comes to you with a smile? It doesn't come to you with a frown. Mm, mm.
Carrie sent me. Go ahead.
Who's speaking?
Thank you. Yes, so much wisdom, like when you were saying about speak no evil, see no evil, and all that. And he was so clear to say that that is not Christian Science. That was such a wonderful thing, because the world talks so much about that. But he made it very clear. I don't know what the quote is. That is not Christian Science. And it really is so powerful to know that, because we hear it a lot. I wanted to share also that I have such a beautiful inspiration about the term animal magnetism. And in prayer, I wasn't even thinking about this, but it just came to me so beautifully that I refer now to unreal magnetism, because right away it reminds me, first of all, of what it is. It's unreal. And also, second of all, it doesn't involve the animals in such a term, you know, as the most terror. And also, I'm just so grateful for that article, the ways that are vain, because every time we go to it, the power of God is right there, and it takes away the fear of unreal magnetism or animal magnetism.
Yeah, thank you. We had that on our Wednesday reading with Misha Ila. Gary?
Well, you know, thinking about this, this attitude towards error, evil, whatever, is not just a problem in Christian Science. It's a problem in the world, because people run from things that they're afraid of. And, you know, it's good to sit down and think of what you do every day and how much you do it out of fear. This was a big eye-opener for me. But people fear, everybody fears something, it seems like, except a really good working Christian Scientist. That's why Christian Science is the only answer to every problem the world seems to have. But people medicate themselves, they do things to hide themselves from the things that they fear. And it doesn't help. It doesn't work. Because we see the disastrous results of that all over. That's why the world needs what we have so desperately. And we each have a job to live the best life we can. As an example, professing isn't going to do it. But the life that you live will do something.
A lot of, you know, in reading history, a lot of what Hitler did, it was because no one stopped him. You know, no one had the guts to stop him. Mm-hmm. No one thought, well, it's not so bad, or it's okay, or it'll go away.
He'll just want one more thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One more thing. Well, yeah, and that lack of action let him get farther along than he ever should have been. So we must be willing to speak up and judge righteous judgment as well. To get back to a little bit of what Elizabeth was talking about, you know, in a way how the error comes to you so you will accept it. Well, it definitely comes in a way that you will think, oh, it's okay, or it's not so bad. In these were beautiful articles, again, sent by Carrie, on the three temptations of Christ, which is in the golden text in this week's lesson. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. That was what the Christ rebuked the so-called devil with, right? In each of the cases where he was being tempted, he said, and we've talked about this a lot too, he said, it is written. He knew his scriptures. This is why you study in the morning. This is why you write things down. This is your arsenal. When error knocks on your door, you quote scripture. Now, sometimes, as in the case of the Christ here, the devil tries to quote the scriptures back at you, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it'll say things like, oh, you know, you're supposed to be loving, or, you know, just when you're about to confront an error, oh, don't, you know, you're being too hard, you have to be loving, or something else. So you've got to really know your scriptures and know if you're being led and motivated by the Christ to go after it and not be stopped by error trying to calm you down.
That's why you study the key to the scriptures.
Yes, the key to tell you exactly what's meant.
What the scriptures really mean.
And it was interesting in this article by the Reverend Mason, written in 1888, you know, he says the devil through temptations had tried to appeal to Jesus through appetite. I mean, here he'd been on 40 days and 40 nights fasting. He must have been really hungry. And then vanity. And then the last one, ambition. So his reply, get thee hence, Satan. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shall thou serve. So it's a long article, but we'll put it online because it makes such wonderful points. Mason says, baffled in his attempted capture of Jesus through vanity, Satan now appeals to ambition. He offers Jesus the rulership of the world. How well Satan knew it, if Jesus succeeded in demonstrating the messianic understanding that the demonic hold on mankind would be forever severed. Therefore, one thing more he will offer Jesus. All Satan has left. He unrolls before Jesus a panorama of the world. All this I will give thee if thou wilt fall down and worship me. All the kingdoms of the world would belong to Jesus if he would acknowledge material potentiality. The panorama unrolled. As Jesus gazed upon the wide prospect, countries and empires and crowns passed before him in a moment of time. In them he saw the possibilities of a lie. He saw himself as the regal head of the world. This is what many of the Jews long for. Consequently, Jesus was brought in his thought face to face with the spirit of the age. It was the sovereignty of the world which the tempter offered Jesus if he would do him homage. But then it said the Jews would then generally accept and follow Jesus as the Messiah. There would be no suffering, no cross, no humiliation, no reproach, only glory and secular power. This was truly Satan's last throw. This princely offer was paramount and excelled the two preceding bribes. The boon included colossal wealth, luxury indescribable, pomp and power, which monarchs might envy. The world would lie at his feet. This tender was all Satan had, his masterpiece. And had Jesus yielded to the arch tempter, man would have lost his birthright. And so would Jesus, for he would have forfeited his spiritual reign for temporal sovereignty. Now you see this today too with, you know, some of our officials or government officials being bribed, being tempted, seeing if they can get them to do what Aaron would bid them to do. Mm-hmm. And it only takes this deep righteousness within that will not be tempted. I just saw recently, I don't know who the actor was, but the actor said that he had been asked to do a sex scene, okay, and he refused. He said he just did not want to. He had a wife, and he didn't feel it was right. So they said, I'll fire you if you don't do the sex scene. And he said, okay, well, he was fired. He said he lost his house. He lost his Mercedes. He lost all this, but he gained his soul. And he said, these lips are only for my wife. And I'm sure that he will do well somehow, in some way, because mm-hmm. he stood for principle. And how many think if more actors and actresses did this sort of thing, what different movies and things we would have?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there'd be fewer actors and actresses that their lives end up in ruin.
Yeah, that's right. They end up in ruin because they are bought. They are bought by these suggestions. And so the ability and power to stand up to temptations is just paramount. And you can.
Mary, I'm sorry. I was just going to mention that I know who you're talking about. And his acting career has boomed. He has been on many, many, many productions.
Oh, he's
a great character actor. And I also read that interview that he spoke about, "These lips are only for my wife." And I was just so touched by that. And it hasn't hurt him one bit.
Thank you. Do you remember his name?
Oh, I can't remember his name. He's got white hair and bright blue eyes. He's very distinguishable. He's played a lot of evil characters in many, many great TV productions.
Thank you.
And he's really very, very good.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Another thing that came my way this week was sort of interesting, and it goes along with all of this. It was a newspaper article that men are losing the battle against their own pleasure. Now, it brings out the fact of pornography, which is so widespread and easy to find. And it's a temptation that talks about in this article, this guy in seventh grade, he started. And it took from him everything in a way. He could no longer have a normal relationship with a woman because this sort of stuff is in your head. You can't get rid of it. And the article brings out one of the only ways to conquer it is through abstinence.
Yes.
To say no, 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 don't go there. Just say no. And often only through the Christ with any of these so-called addictions, it takes the Christ to combat these errors, whether it's pornography, gambling, liquor, drugs. You need a power more than your own self-will to conquer it. Otherwise, it just, rolls around in your head all the time. And it's certainly something we work to teach our children.
Yes.
It's a lot harder with the internet where people can get on it and look at this stuff and think they're doing it in secret. But as Elsie would say, her mother would tell you, well, God sees everything, So even though I'm not watching you, God's seeing what you're doing. And there are very, very, very bad consequences to these addictions. But to Elizabeth's point, they can sometimes start out as maybe seeming a bit on the harmless side.
Right.
And it is possible. For them, it's possible as a technologist for them to filter. Google does much more than that. The filter is all the stuff out. We used to have sensors that would, even on TV, they'd boom, stop it before it would be air. If they wanted to, and I don't think it's a great expense, it could recognize images and stop before anybody ever sees it.
Wow.
And 401 page come up or something. 404. There's no reason why. It's just desire. If they want to stop it,
they could stop it.
Yeah, they could stop it.
Go ahead. Who's speaking?
I can share about that. The Bible has such a wonderful quote that blessed me so much, all about these intoxicants. I was raised in Colombia, which unfortunately is so well known for drugs, and marijuana is just, people know, great over there. And they think everybody, by the way, does it, but it's more exported than done there. But I was all around that, even though my family never was into any of that. And from that time, even, a girl, I just knew that was the wrong thing. But the Bible, with this quote that says, the evil thing, you do not even touch it. And that gave me everything to always stay away from that until today. And that's something so great for addiction. If we really stick to just that Bible quote, it tells us don't even touch it. So there's not even a way to get into it because we won't touch it. If we obey just that one Bible quote, it's been such a blessing, and I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you. Thank you. You don't even go there. You close the door the minute it tempts you, because it'll just lead you farther and farther away from God. And in the lesson, the works of the flesh, you know, all those words, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness. I looked up a lot of those words, and most of them had to do with immorality, unfaithfulness to the marriage covenant, lewdness, moral impurity, indulgence of animal desires, state of enmity, desire of superiority, contention, strife, insurrection, intercourse with the devil. How about that one? That's witchcraft. So these things, but if you know they have no power over you, no attraction at all, no attraction. The only attraction is the attraction of spirit. You shouldn't be tormented with that. And dear souls, I mean, some people have it with their family or they grow up with this stuff. But even so, many children know better and reject it. So this is our work, you know, in our prayers and for all mankind to be free of these false addictions, false attractions. And this sort of goes into what Karen sent. I don't think you have time to read that whole thing, but you can summarize it, I think.
Okay, well... Well, I'll guess I'll just read the second paragraph. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was referring to Galatians 5 verse 16, walking in the Spirit. We have pointed out that in our text, to walk in the Spirit means to regulate the practical life by the Spirit of God, and that the desires of the flesh mean the desires of the whole human nature apart from God. But even if we take the contrasted terms in their lower and commonly adopted sense, the text is true and useful. A cultivated mind habituated to lofty ideas and quick to feel the nobility of spiritual pursuits and possessions will have no taste for the gross delights of sense and will recoil with disgust from the indulgences in which more animal natures wallow. But while this is true, it by no means exhausts the great principle laid down here. We must take the contrasted terms in their fullest meaning if we would arrive at it. The spiritual life, derived from Jesus Christ and lodged in the human spirit, has to be guarded, cherished, and made dominant, and then it will drive out the old. If the spirit which is life because of righteousness is allowed free course in a human spirit, it will send forth its powers into the body, which is dead because of sin, will regulate its desires, and if needful, will suppress them. And it is wiser and more blessed to rely on this overflowing indulgence than to attempt the hopeless task of coercing these desires by our own efforts.
Overflowing influence. So you said indulgence, but anyway.
Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry. And it's wiser and more blessed to rely on this overflowing influence than to attempt the hopeless task of coercing these desires by our own efforts.
Yes,
that's what you meant.
Thank you.
But I liked how he said in the first paragraph how you have to replace. Many a man has in good faith set himself to conquer his own evil lusts and has found that the net result of his struggles has been to make the lusts more conspicuous and correspondingly more powerful. The apostle knows a better way, which he has proved to his own experience, and now now with full confidence and triumph presses upon his hearers. He would have them give up the monotonous and hopeless fight against the flesh and bring another ally into the field. So he was exhorting to do the opposite,
anyway, I just, there was.
Well, it's what
yeah.
Jeremy said about if you want to lose weight and you're always looking at chocolate cake or something.
Oh, like yeah. I remember years ago, someone was having trouble not like quitting smoking. And I said, well, it's a shame that all the signs say no smoking because you're constantly reminded of smoking. And if you're trying to lose weight and all the signs said no hot, delicious brownies, you know, it would make it really difficult.
So this is why when any of these things, we focus on the enduring, the good, and the true. We don't think about like, no sex, you're not going to have any sex ever again. Or yes, no hot chocolate, delicious brownies, or whatever it is, whatever the lure is. No, you focus on the enduring, the good, and the true. You fill your thought up with that. It's a lot easier. And it will work, actually, because it's the power of God working. And that helps immeasurably in overcoming these temptations. And that's why we don't go to movies or other things that are going to put all this in your head, or go online and look at these things that are going to put these things in your head, or eat these things, or whatever else it's trying. If Jesus could overcome those temptations the way he did, we certainly can follow that example and be victorious. Get thee behind me, Satan. Kick it out. So we're going to end on what our leader says, which is very beautiful.
In ways that are vain. She writes, beloved Christian Scientists, keep your minds so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter them. It is plain that nothing can be added to the mind already full. There is no door through which evil can enter, and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. And not only yourselves are safe, but all whom your thoughts rest upon are thereby benefited. The self-seeking pride of the evil thinker injures him when he would harm others. Goodness involuntarily resists evil. The evil thinker is the proud talker and doer. The right thinker abides under the shadow of the Almighty. His thoughts can only reflect peace, goodwill towards men, health, and holiness. Mary Baker-Eddy.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.